Hello, welcome along to this week's episode of Let's Get Running Podcast. It's me, Sean, on my end this week. We're continuing on our focus at the moment about inclusion and diversity in the sport of running. Are we making sure that our sport's set up for everybody to succeed? Now, we want to hear from you about this, we want to hear your issues. We've got a big interview this week. We're talking to Charlie Dark. He's the founder of Run Dem Crew. We're going to talk about crew culture as a whole, reaching different groups, getting people running that wouldn't ordinarily be reached. It's a great interview. Have a listen to that. If you want to get involved, want to hear your questions, next week we're going to be discussing with Tim Prendergast the world of, disability running, but we're going to get Tim's take on the issues. But get in touch. We want to hear what you think about this. Send us an email, get in touch at letsgetrunning.co.uk, or you can call the WhatsApp line, +31 612 679 529. Have a listen to Charlie now. Get in touch with us. As always, rate and review the show. We love to hear your messages. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Let's Get Running. Get involved. I should say last week we talked a bit about news for last month, and we talked a bit about the European cross country and some amazing results for the British team. We had gold team wins for the men and women's team, which is pretty amazing. We also, I think, won the gold in the mixed relay. So some crazy performances there. And we had two golds in the men's and women's under 20 teams and a bronze in the women's under 23 team. So some pretty amazing performances there from the British cross country team. Nice one. So here we go with Charlie. As always, get in touch. We want to hear what you think about this issue. On today's show, we are talking to DJ, ambassador for London ambassador for Lululemon running, and founder of Run Dem Crew, Charlie Dark. How you doing, Charlie?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Very good. Yeah, good. And yeah, we're just off air chatting about London and the weather. Hopefully, we're going to get something nicer over the Christmas period, but you never know, do you?
Yeah, hopefully.
And it's the election tomorrow, so that's probably a dark cloud over London at the moment, I guess.
Yeah.
So we're here to talk about running. So like, how did you start out kind of on your running journey? How did you kind of catch the bug originally?
I ran a lot when I was at school, and then around about 1989, when I kind of got into the music industry, I just kind of stopped moving altogether and didn't really do any exercise until around end of 2006 2007, kind of you know, just a bit disillusioned with where I was at in life. You know, started running as a way of kind of trying to find myself, and just kind of fell in love with it from there.
Great. And what did that look like then? Did you just kind of get out there and just go for runs on your own sort of thing?
No, I started, I mean, there were a number of different reasons why I started running. One was obviously the personal quest, you know, kind of going for some mental health issues at the time and kind of wanting to kind of see if running would kind of bring a bit more happiness into my life. Yeah. Was working in a lot of youth projects at the time with young people who were kind of trapped by their postcodes and kind of unable to navigate themselves around London.
Yeah.
And I thought running would be a good way of basically allowing them to kind of meet different people from around London and to be mentored by different people from around London as well. So kind of an intergenerational group and a kind of safe way of getting them from one kind of area to another. And then the Olympics were on the way, and there was kind of a lot of talk about the Olympic legacy and living near the Olympic Stadium. You know, I kind of, you know, I just wasn't believing the spiel that basically after the Olympics, there would be this massive uptake of people kind of participating in sport. And so the idea was to kind of create a community in East London that would kind of thrive during the Olympics and go on to kind of bigger and greater things afterwards and kind of just keep that Olympic legacy of movement alive.
Yeah. Were you born in East London?
I was born in the South.
Okay.
I've lived in the East since 1995.
Okay, cool. And what was your experience then as a kid? Did you do much running at school and stuff?
Yeah, I did a lot of running at school. I ran cross country, ran track, ran 100 metres, 200, 400.
Yeah.
Had a kind of quite successful running career at schoolboy level.
Yeah.
You know.
So what stopped you carrying it on then? Did you want to run as a teenager?
I think,
teenage.
Yeah. I mean, I think like most kids, once you kind of come out of education and go to university, there's not the kind of structure of, you know, a regular physical education lessons per week.
Yeah.
And okay. So I basically kind of, and I kind of, as I said, I kind of got involved in the music industry. And so, you know, that became the priority.
Yeah.
And not very many people, you know, I didn't really know people in the music industry who were kind of running or doing any form of exercise. So this wasn't a thing that we did.
Okay. Okay. And just took that little spark to change. Was there a spark? Was there something that you thought, hang on, this is what I need to get back into. This is what is... I enjoyed when I was younger.
No, I mean, it was really, I mean, I'm a big trainer collector. And yeah. So, you know, I've always had a really huge, you know, trainer collection. And so basically it was just a thing of kind of like, you know, I want to get fit. I want to start taking care of myself. I can do better.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to go to the gym. Gyms were quite intimidating places back in like, you know, 2006, 2007, the boutique gym hadn't kind of really arrived. And, you know, living in East London, it was kind of a lot of kind of old school powerlifting gyms, which I didn't really, you know, didn't really appeal to me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, running was just kind of like quick, simple, cheap way to kind of, you know, start making a change.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with it.
Great. Well, initially, what about like you said you're working in youth projects and things, and
yeah.
Were people like, what was the take up like? Were people interested in what you were doing? Were people keen to join you? Or was there maybe a bit of, was running?
I mean, not really vague? Yeah. I mean, what had happened is I started running and then people started noticing a change in myself. You know, my general demeanor seemed to change. And, you know, my friends were just like, you know, what are you doing? Like, what's this thing that you're doing that basically is making you seem so alive? And, you know, I was just like, well, I'm just running. You know, and so we just, a group of five of us started running on a Friday night, we'd run a mile,
yeah,
post it on Facebook and go and eat some food.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a really good way of reconnecting with, you know, my fellow creatives, because by that time, you know, we were, you know, quite successful in our careers. There's a lot of traveling involved. Rise of social media meant that, you know, we weren't really keeping in touch kind of in a face-to-face way. It was becoming more of an online relationship. And then, you know, the rise of very powerful laptops meant that a lot of, you know, home computers meant that a lot of studios started closing down because basically now you didn't have to go to a big studio to make music anymore. And so the studio as a hub for musical community was no longer a thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Random Crew was just like a way of kind of trying to keep the family together.
Great. And so when was it started then? So it was, you said you started around 2006.
I started running 2006. Random started around 2007.
Okay, great. And yeah. Obviously initially it was just kind of more you and your peers, but
yeah.
When did you start like having a different vision for it? Like, and start to...
I think as more and more people heard about it, it just kind of, and it just seemed to really resonate with them.
Hmm.
And then, you know, we just kind of, what started as a kind of group between five opened up into a group of about 30 people.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, from there, you know what happens is kind of, you know, you start doing a thing, it's super underground, and we really try to incubate Random Crew for as long as possible before letting the world knew that we existed.
Yeah.
And once they did, the article started being written. I think there was a thing in The Guardian, I think Runners World did a piece, and then it just kind of exploded.
Yeah. You know? And was it like, because you often like, I mean, I've, you know, you look around for an article saying, is running too white and is running this and is running that?
Yeah.
Like, was that your kind of, your motivation was to try and, because I've seen like participation figures about young black men and young men from ethnic communities aren't necessarily... Yeah. Aren't running, aren't exercising. Was that a motivation for you? But was it more like along economic lines that you were thinking, like with, you mentioned with the postcodes and the fact that some people are quite trapped? What was it? Was it an ethnic kind of motivation, I guess, or was it more like an economic one? I guess they're both tied in together, but what was your...
No, thought? I mean, it, you know, my thing on... The thing about the lack of diversity in running is something that always comes up, and it's something that I'm often asked about. And what I say to people is like, it's not that running isn't diverse. It's just that the diversity isn't celebrated.
Right.
I travel around the world. I meet runners of all colours, shapes, sizes, creeds, colours, religions, you know, genders, from all different types of classes. It's kind of, you know, the diversity in running is not just about a colour thing. It's class, it's social, it's kind of, it's size and shape and gender.
Yeah.
But those runners are there. It's just they're not celebrated. And you cannot be what you can't see. So... If I don't think that people like myself are doing an activity, I'm not likely to kind of gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
That's just a general thing that is prevalent in society.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I started Run Them, it wasn't that I was like, oh, I want to make running more diverse. I was just like, this is a really beneficial thing for the creative mind, you know, and the young mind, because running brings structure into people's, into unorganized people's lives, because you're working towards a goal. Yeah. And so for young people, it basically means that you learn a lot from training for a marathon that can be applied as a life skill, how you break a big project down into smaller, more manageable chunks. How you balance performance and recovery and reflection and so on and so forth. My thing was just like, running is amazing. The way that it's being talked about and the type of opportunities for people to run with the traditional running clubs will not appeal to the people that I'm trying to reach, because what the crew culture doesn't get credit for is that we've managed to get people who are very difficult to reach to move.
Yeah.
And to move at a high level.
Yeah.
We've got people in Run Them Crew running 2:21 marathons.
Yeah.
Within the Run Crew culture, there's people running 2:15s, 2:12s. It's like right the way up to seven and a half hours. You know, there's a very broad spectrum of runners that we've managed to unearth from some very unlikely sources. And so that was the main, you know, that was the main, my main concern. And obviously when I was going to races, you know, I was kind of thinking, I wasn't seeing a lot of people of color. I wasn't seeing a lot of diversity in shape and size and gender. And, but that wasn't my initial mission. My thing was like, people from my immediate music community are dying young. They are leading unhealthy lives. What can we do to kind of provide an intervention for that?
Great. And then so it, obviously then it grew so quickly, and people like, you had people like Nike, heavily supported. Obviously they are at the moment kind of looked upon as a bit of the bogeyman and, in sporting circles, but were they, did they get it? Were they helpful in helping you grow, and what sort of involvement did they have in Run Them Crew?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been running Run Them Crew for about 2 years, and then the idea came about kind of, we need a safe space in London where our young people can meet. That's in a neutral area. And we need a nice space, an inspiring and inspirational space. And we'd heard about this community space that they had opened up in Shoreditch. And we partnered up because I'd always had a relationship with Nike through being a musician.
Right.
And so Mike had a really supportive, was providing space. To get regular space in London for 9 years is unheard of. A space that's big enough to hold like, you know, 200, 250 people, it's unheard of. And so that was one of the biggest things that they brought to the table. And then obviously when you partner with like a major sports brand such as Nike, their network and the influence that they have around the world means that what you're doing then gets amplified. But at the same time, we wanted to remix running culture.
Yeah.
And so our idea was like, it's very hard to remix culture and bring change to the world from the outside. So at some point you have to kind of get inside the system and then start influencing the system. And so for us, you know, we started working with Nike when Nike were like number two in the running world, you know, and it was kind of, they weren't a major player.
Yeah.
But, you know, through the insights that they gained from working with us and various other crews around the world, we directly influenced kind of the fashion, how the clothes looked, how the shoes looked, the whole culture around running. Because our thing was that if you can open this running culture up so it becomes a lifestyle, then you're going to kind of attract a new wave of runners. And I think what people don't realize is kind of, up until about 2007, 2008, 2009, there wasn't a young energy within running.
No.
You know, it was very much kind of like, you know, a middle-aged pastime.
Yeah.
And so what crew culture did is it just brought this younger energy into, in, into the running world, and people who were coming at running from a different, you know, perspective. So different, a different approach to running.
Yeah. And let's talk about the running culture now. So it has... it has changed a lot over the last few years, but still, like, the traditional, I guess, running clubs, are very different. Have you? I think you guys had a crack at the Met League, which is properly traditional.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Did you firstly, I guess, did you enjoy the experience of being part of that competition?
Yeah, I mean, I love what the traditional running clubs do, and I think they're very important, you know. And I think there's a definite place for them. I think what's happened is the industry has tried to pit kind of run crew culture against run club culture.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just the same thing with a different name
Yeah.
and a slightly different approach. But they both need each other to exist. Because ultimately, what run crew culture does is very good at is inspiring people to, you know, to move and to get moving and to try the impossible. But when you get people running in the 235, 220 period, there's only so much that you can do from a run crew culture part of the world. Mm. And at that point, you then might want to start partnering people with your traditional coaches and your traditional running club structures. We're trying to feed back into the, you know, into the mainstream running world.
Mm.
And so I love what clubs do, and we've got a lot of love for the run clubs, particularly the ones we see at London during London Marathon. And we've got generally got a good, you know, relationship with everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, I can think of people that run for both. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Tom Payne.
A lot of people do that now.
Yeah, he's a good example of someone who runs for both a club and runs for Rundem. So it's not like a mutually exclusive thing. It's funny because I used to think of a disconnect and between you know this run club culture, and it was I didn't know why I ever thought that it was a separate thing, but I did. It's quite easy to fall into that narrative, and I guess a lot of people would be feeling the same. Strange that.
Well, I think generally it's again it comes down to human nature.
Yeah.
If someone starts doing something that you deem to be different or subversive or a bit more shiny, and I think the thing that got people was kind of like, how are these run crew people having these relationships with these brands? Mm,
yeah.
And I think it's because they didn't understand that a lot of us already had relationships with these brands in our day jobs.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like this thing of like, oh, I've been running for a week. Oh, now I've got a Nike deal. You know, it's, by that time, you know, I'd already had a relationship with Nike for 10 years before I'd even started doing anything running related with them.
Yeah.
You know, because we've come from street culture and sportswear culture go hand in hand.
Yeah.
So there's always been a relationship there.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, we are trying to reach people who are difficult to reach. So whereas a lot of people's running club experience at that in the early days was kind of like, you turn up, you run, and then once that run is over, that's the end. That's
it. Yeah.
You know, it's all about performance. Our thing was kind of like, well, how can we take what we learn from performance and apply that into what we're doing in our lifestyle?
Yeah.
Why can't I run and talk to someone about records that I bought or records that I've made or food that I've eaten and so on and so forth while still being at a high level of performance?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
They're not exclusive. You know, it's kind of you can run at a high level and still have an interest in other things outside of running.
Yeah. And you mentioned a bit earlier about kind of having, if you don't have the role models you see in the media, like, obviously, we'll perhaps come on to Mo in a little bit, but famously, things like Runner's World, they very rarely feature athletes from different ethnic backgrounds.
Like, yep.
Does it matter? Are people conscious of that? And do you think that, well, the media's got something to answer for in a way? Or
you know? I mean, I think you can't be what you can't see.
Mm.
So if I don't see myself in the magazines, do not be surprised then when I basically I'm not that interested at the time when I need to be interested, like around the Olympics. So I think there's this disconnect because basically people look at marathons as like, okay, so the Kenyans and the Africans run, they come past and they're real runners.
Mm.
Oh, and then there's the guy with the fridge on his back.
Yeah.
And then the guy in the charity costume. That's their kind of idea of the marathon story.
Yeah.
Because that is the marathon story that they're shown.
Yeah.
And
yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't help that basically the running magazines often are not that diverse in the type of runners that they show. And again, it's not about colour.
Hmm.
It's about class. It's about gender. Runners come in all shapes and sizes.
Hmm.
And I think if the running industry is thinking about its future, it needs to start thinking to itself, well, the demographic of people that we have at the moment at some point are going to get too old to run. Is there going to be a big intake of new younger runners coming through?
Yeah.
And it's no surprise to me for starting Rundem careers because we grew up in the 80s and the 90s when British middle distance running was ruling.
Yeah.
If you grew up in the Seb Cram, you know, Ovet era, you kind of start thinking to yourself, okay, why is it that we're not basically dominating those middle distances like we used to?
Mm.
And I think it's because the pool of people that they're pulling from is getting smaller.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's some stones that are not being turned over.
Yeah.
So there's some talent that's not being discovered and not being nurtured and not being encouraged.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the thing that people have to realize is kind of you can wheel out athletes every 4 years, be it for a World Cup, be it for, you know, World Athletic Championships, Olympics, and create these kind of hyper ads around these athletes, like these people are superhuman. And often what happens is they either don't perform or in this day and age, there's a drug scandal.
Yeah.
So for the average kid on the street, he's more inspired by the fish and chip shop man who ran London Marathon than he is by the elite athlete, because there's no, he doesn't get to speak to the elite athlete.
Yeah.
Every time this elite athlete opens their mouth, it's a scripted conversation that you're being told.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really, it's, you know, we're in the inspiration business. People want to be inspired. And I just think the industry has to realize, like, the old ways work to a certain group of people, but that group of people is shrinking.
Yeah.
You know?
So what do you think about Mo then? Because he obviously does perform. He does perform pretty damn well a lot of the time. But the image of him, I guess, has certainly lately has been one of quite a negative, really.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Would you think that, like, I don't know, do you think the media have attacked him unfairly? Do you think he is a role model for people, like young guys in London? Is he a good role model for people like that?
I mean, I think he's a good role model in the traditional sense of being a role model. He gets up, he goes to work, he does what he needs to do.
Yeah.
He performs, he delivers, you know what I mean? He takes care of his family. He's a pretty upstanding guy. I don't necessarily feel that he's inspiring to the average kid on the street anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Because when you're waking up in the morning and you have no food in your fridge and you're feeling under attack from the world and your economic options are limited, you're not really identifying with the multimillionaire running guy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, great. That's great that you're doing that. But how's that helping me?
They're just so far removed from reality because, well, especially with the Kenyan guys, you never get, they never get shown anywhere. You don't, most people wouldn't know what their names are. Like,
well, I mean, they come past you in a blur.
Yeah.
And then there's a 5 minute interview in the BBC and then that's that.
Yeah.
Kids, we need more than that. If you're living in the age of social media with, you know, YouTube, it's Facebook, you know, Twitter, Instagram, it's kind of like this, people are growing up in the age of storytellers.
Yeah.
We want to hear the story. I want to know what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay.
So I think, yeah, you know, and as far as the press's relationship with Mo, well, the UK press don't necessarily like to champion anyone.
No.
Who's slightly different. So
yeah,
they're not, I wouldn't say they're unfairly treating him more than they're treating someone else. But ultimately, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, that's the way the industry is set up by.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really concern me because it's kind of, I know what running is doing and I know what other organizations like us are doing. That circus, that media circus, I have no part of that.
Yeah.
No, that serves me no purpose
yeah.
of fulfillment.
So what's next for you then? What's next for you and Rundem over the next few years?
What's next? Everyone always asks us what's next. You know, more of the same
yeah.
and lots of different.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously, there's a big demand for Rundem Crew around the world.
Yeah.
There is talk about setting up Rundem Crews in other countries.
Yeah.
I think definitely more youth work, you know, and getting more into that. We've got a big project around London Marathon coming up because it's the 40th anniversary of London Marathon.
Yeah.
And we've got a big project around that coming up. And generally just continuing to be present and to inspire other people and to help other people set up kind of similar organizations so they can get the world moving.
Yeah, great.
Rundem Crew was never set up to be something that was kind of for financial gain.
Yeah.
It's always been about just kind of like, we like running. Running's changed our lives. We want to share our love of running with as many people around the world as possible. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's
you
great.
Know, it's kind of, it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that is the thing that ultimately has made it so successful because there is no ulterior motive other than the fact that we love running. And we think that basically it should be something that everyone should have a go at. And maybe you might have a go and hate it, but it may unlock the key to another form of movement
yeah.
that is, you know, that you like more, yeah. you know, but it's one of the simplest things to get into, but also one of the hardest because there are a lot of barriers to it
yeah.
at the moment.
Yeah. And these days the shoes are getting more expensive, right?
The shoes are unfortunately getting really expensive.
Yeah.
You know, but again, We've run them, you know, one of the things we're doing a lot at the moment is kind of, you know, running without watches and just kind of running in any old shoes. Yeah. And just kind of, you know, just getting it people into the idea of like, isn't about what you're wearing.
Yeah.
It's about just getting out with your friends and basically moving, whether it be for 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, half marathon, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's not about time and distance all the time. It's about kind of coming together to enjoy something and then thinking, you know, what have I learned from the run and how can I share that with my community and what impact will that have?
Great. And how do people get involved then? Can people just turn up for a run or do you have to kind of...
Yeah, man. It's just, we're based at Brixton Street Gym down in Brixton in South London. And, the way it works now is you come down, you become a member of the gym. It's a community gym, so we're trying to support what they do.
Yeah.
It's £12 to become a member, £12 a month. That allows you to run with the crew and take classes at the gym.
Right.
Some people, because the gym membership is so cheap, come down and pay £24 or £36 or whatever, because they basically means that someone else from the community can come for free.
Okay, right.
So our things all at the moment is very much about this impact of kind of the social impact that running can, you know, running together as a group can bring.
Great. And that is that the only run you guys got going? Because you had a few at one stage, and you West.
We did have quite a few, yeah. You know, we were partnered with Gymbox and we were doing stuff. At the moment, it's just one run and crew run a week.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, 7 p.m, as has been the last 13 years.
Get down. I've got three like quick fire questions.
Yeah, of course.
I shouldn't keep you for your whole day, but we've got three quick fire questions that we're asking everyone we interview. And they are, I should have asked you, what are you looking to do personally for the next 12 months? You got any marathons in mind and stuff?
I'd like to run London.
Yeah.
I'd like to run New York. It's the 50th anniversary of New York Marathon as well. So I'd like to run that. And I'd like to kind of get into ultra marathons, really, is the thing, and trail running.
Okay.
Because I've run in the city for the last 13 years of life. You know?
Yeah.
I've run all over the world. I've seen every form of concrete there is to run. But I want to kind of get into get my trainers muddy.
You want to jump some tree roots and stuff, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, again, our whole thing is informing where running culture is going.
Mm.
And so I think we've told the road story. We've inspired people to get onto the road. Now I think it's about getting people out of the city into the countryside, into the open air, reconnecting people with nature through movement.
And that was, trail, that is probably the whitest of all, it's not very diverse. I tried to ask a question on Twitter yesterday about if anyone knew of any non-white representatives, female representatives for GB over the last 30 years, endurance events, and they could name one. And we're going to interview her this for a couple of weeks' time. But it's crazy that there should be.
I mean, the thing that people have to understand is like the world is not necessarily diverse anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual that there are these sports and pastimes where there is a lack of diversity.
Mm.
The main thing is like when you get called out about it, is to kind of do something about it.
Yeah.
The thing is about, if you look at all of these races, you know, you want to get more people, you know, diversity in trail racing, give away more free places in the places where it needs to be given out.
Yeah.
And giving these people coaches so they can come and allow them to experience it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not that people don't want to do it. It's intimidating to go to a place and stand on the front line of a race and be the only person of color.
Yeah.
It is intimidating because there's not only questions that you're asking yourself of, should I be here? There's also the questions that other people are asking you of like, why are you here?
Yeah.
And because you're not Kenyan and you're not going to win. So therefore, you know, what are you doing on the start line? But I think that actually, as proven with Run Them, it's kind of all it takes is a small spark. And then more and more people get into it. And then before you know, it starts to change.
Yeah.
If you look at the English Premier League, if you look at football in this country, football wasn't diverse 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But then certain players start coming in. And then before you know, it starts to balance itself out.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, one of my more things, you know, if I'm thinking about trail running, you know, even in lack of diversity is like the lack of women.
Yeah.
In the gender imbalance, you know, that to me is something that's kind of like equally as important.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you go to, you know, to trail races and it's kind of heavily weighed in favour of men.
Yeah, 100 men and a handful of women at the back. Yeah,
So that's something that kind of has to be addressed.
Yeah.
There are some uncomfortable conversations that need to be had, but, you know, at the end of the day, everyone benefits because there are new people with new energy and new ideas who come into the sport and keep it going for longer.
Yeah, and it's not as if, say, you know, you might get some different people coming and joining. You're not saying immediately these guys are going to be world beaters, but they're daughters or their granddaughters or their grandsons. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're inspiring a generation now, who knows what's going to happen in you know, a couple of generations' time when these guys see their family and their peers and everyone else competing in the same way. So,
I mean, if I look, you know, even if I look at Run Them, you know, year one of Run Them, there was probably one person who'd run a marathon and he'd run it in 5 hours. We thought he was a god. You know, now there's probably 20, 30 people in the crew all running under 2:45.
Yeah.
People running 2:30, 2:20. Do you mean? So it's kind of basically, I just know, you know, I know it's kind of, if you create the right environment and give people access to the right kind of advice, they excel.
Yeah.
And you place them in a group and that group lifts each other up and suddenly you've got 20 people in Boston.
Yeah.
Which 10 years ago was like, oh, people would just be laughing at us when you started talking about Boston.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. I better ask you these questions or I'm going to keep you all day, Charlie. But the last quickfire ones are, if you could be running anywhere right now, where would it be?
Yeah. I'd be running in Australia, in the outback.
Nice.
I just came back like a week ago. It was amazing. Absolutely. Blue Mountains in Australia. Man, that was like pretty impressive.
Yeah. That's one that we've never had an event like that, Australia, actually. That's quite an, like, I wouldn't have thought that as immediately somewhere you'd kind of pick out. It's quite barren, isn't it? Or is it a...
Yeah, I mean, it's biz, but there's, you know, you're running with kangaroos and, you know, there's all types of nature. It's amazing. Just, you know, it's kind of just the scenery that you see. It's really, really incredible. And there's an amazing run crew culture out there. So it's great.
Great. Second question is, recommend our listeners something.
What, to read or to listen to?
Anything or either. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's a good one. let's see now. Recommend. You know what? What I would recommend is one day a week, go out without your watch or your phone and just go and have to go for a run and just really try and connect with what you see, what you hear and how you feel and then come home and journal that.
Sounds good.
You know, more mindful, you know, having bringing mindful running into your kind of training schedule can be really beneficial.
I like that.
Do more yoga.
And the last one is, what in your opinion is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
Wow, that's a good one, man. There are so many amazing things that people have done. But I would say, for myself personally, from, you know, where my point of view, there's a race called the Speed Project.
Yeah.
Which runs from LA to Vegas. So it's like 346 miles, team relay. I think the type of people who are doing that race, that for me is really impressive, because it's kind of, you know, it's people who you wouldn't expect to be kind of even undertaking such a distance.
Yeah. Sounds good.
So that for me, you know, other than that, you know, I think obviously, you know, the sub-2 project, kind of getting someone to run sub-2 marathon.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But then there's all people like people who've completed the four deserts, running across countries. There's always going to be someone who's going to run further and faster than you. So I think the best is yet to come.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be back running after the Achilles heals up.
Hopefully. It's so annoying. You know, it's jarring at the moment.
Yeah. We'll see you in an ultra soon.
Hopefully, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Then we definitely will do.
Good stuff. Good, man. Well, good to chat, Charlie. Thanks for your time. And
no problem at all.
Good luck this year. Cheers, man.
All right, thanks, man.